So I about 2 years ago, I think it was, I gave a sermon entitled, "How Dark Is Your Light?" So this is a series of studies entitled, "How Dark Is Your Light 2.0." So I want to build on that. Some of you may remember the sermon, maybe you've forgotten it, but I was struck by a passage in Matthew that talked about the fact, we'll get there a little bit later, that the eye is the light to the body, and if you have a bad eye, your body is going to be filled with darkness, and how great is that darkness going to be? So hence the question, how dark is your light? That being said, light is a central theme throughout the Bible. In Genesis chapter 1, it says God created the heavens and the earth, but then in verse 3, the first thing he said is, "Let there be light." He created light by simply stating it into being. And as it says here, there was light. It's a very familiar passage. It happened on the first day or the first cycle of light and darkness. That's a whole other discussion on the length of days and what that all means. But that's Genesis. And then there's this passage in Revelation, all the way at the end of the Bible, and the topic again is light. And we read this, "There shall be no night in the New Jerusalem. They need no lamp nor light of the sun, for the Lord God gives them light." I simply highlight this because you have light being the first thing that was created on the 7 day, the week of creation. And then you go all the way to the end of the Bible, and the topic is light once again. Now, that said, if you track the theme of light all the way through the Bible, it's throughout the whole thing. And certainly, Jesus Christ commanded us to be the light of the world. He said he was the light of the world, and it just goes on and on. The theme of light and what it means is a predominant theme from the beginning of the Bible all the way to the end. And that, I think, should give us pause on just how important the topic is. So let's take a look at just a couple of things here in Genesis as we begin, as I think it is worth noting. In verse 4, "And God saw the light." I mean, that's kind of maybe stating the obvious. He said, "Let there be light." And the next thing he said is, "And God saw the light, and that it was good. And God divided the light from the darkness." Now, I want to bring that to our attention because the book of Genesis, and you might say the Bible in its totality, is a book of distinctions, which stands in stark contrast to the world today in which everything is relative. There's moral relativism. I mean, truth has become relative. Gender, in particular, has become relative. And that was a big topic in Germany, actually. To digress for just a second, the political situation in Germany is similar to ours here. You have, as I was told by the brethren, you have the middle class just stewing. I mean, they're just stewing because they've been ignored, they haven't been heard, and it's brewing. Stuff is brewing, just similar to what we have here. But here's the digression that I found interesting in the discussion. One of the guys forwarded me a link of a speech that was given in the Bundestag, which is the House of Representatives, the Congress in Germany. And they were having a committee hearing. And the one guy, one of the representatives, got up and said, "Sehr geehrte Damen und Herren," I mean, "good afternoon, hello, ladies and gentlemen," which is, you know, normal greeting. And then he proceeded to list all of the genders, introducing all of the, he said, "dear honored homosexuals, dear honored lesbians," and he went on and on and on and on. And it took him about 2 minutes. Finally, the chairman interrupted him and said, "You know, can you get to your point?" And he said, "Excuse me, I haven't finished with my greetings yet." And then at the end, he had one sentence, and the sentence was, "We reject your proposal." And the point of it was, and how it ties into what I'm saying here is, it used to be a binary world. There was male and female, there was light and darkness. And, you know, big distinctions, clear, I should say, clear distinctions. And we see that here in Genesis chapter 1, verse 4. The first thing that God did on the first day was create light, and in doing so, he created a distinction between light and darkness. He divided the two. Genesis chapter 1, verse 5. Notice the next thing he did. He called the light day, and the darkness he called night. So evening and morning were the first day. And, of course, there's a lot of debate about, you know, well, what about the sun? Did the sun exist? And, you know, there's about as many opinions on that as there are commentators. But that's not my point today. The point here simply is that God made a big distinction between light and darkness. God's world on the first day was black and white. God's world on the first day was binary. I mean, when he went all the way up to the sixth day, he kept creating distinctions. There was a distinction on the sixth day between animals and man. Not an evolution from man to animal. Rather, there was a distinction between man and animals that was distinct and remains distinct to this day. And as he created man, there was a distinction there. They were male and female. And I, you know, tracking back to that little digression, I mean, it was meant to be humorous, and it would be humorous if it weren't so serious. The point is simply this. When we depart from the distinctions that God created, it doesn't matter if it's light and darkness, male and female, husband and wife, it creates inefficiencies and confusion. As that little speech so poignantly demonstrated, it used to take 30 seconds to say, "Ladies and gentlemen, we reject your proposal." Instead, now he had to take 2 minutes to address all the possibilities that we've created. God's way is black and white, and it's efficient, and it works. Light is light, and darkness is dark. Light is day, and darkness is night. It's easy to understand. I mean, I had Caleb came over this morning, by the way. They're all getting over chicken pox and having chicken pox. But, you know, I said, what am I writing? Can you read that? You know, it's first grade. How dark is your light? I mean, a first grader can understand that. It's clear. But it's also profound. So Genesis is a book of distinctions, beginning with the distinction between light and darkness. And I want to point out a couple of these. One is, as I mentioned, God created light by simply stating, calling it into existence by saying, "Let there be light." He divided the light from darkness. And then God saw that the light was good. Now notice, God did not say, he did not say that the darkness was good. He only said that light was good. And we see that later, you know, going down through time, if we had the time, I could put forward a whole list of scriptures. This talks about walking in the light, walking in darkness, and it's the contrast between good and evil. Because at the very beginning, God called light good. But he didn't identify, he didn't call the darkness good. God called the day light day and the darkness night. So jumping forward to John chapter 8 in verse 12. Again, John in the opening chapters talks about the Word coming and being the light of the world, and that this light was life. But I want to call our attention to John chapter 8, verse 12. Jesus spoke to them again, saying, I am the light of the world. He who follows me shall not walk in darkness, but have the light of life. So, let's reflect for a moment and unpack this, if you will. He says that he is the light of the world. And he who follows me will have light, the light of life. So light and life are connected. Without light, we don't have life. That's a topic in itself. But the promise that is embedded in here is that if we follow him, the light of the world, we will have both life and clarity. We will not walk in darkness. Because when we walk in darkness, what happens? Now, I might have more experience in that than some of you, because we did not have lights that you could switch on when I was a little punk. In fact, one of my jobs as a little guy was to bring a flashlight and shine the light on whatever it was that my dad was fixing. So we didn't turn on a light. We just had one of these trusty Rayovac flashlights that we had to use in order to work on an engine. To me it was boring, you know. All right. Hold the light so that my dad did not have to work in darkness. We can't see. People who do not follow Jesus Christ have impaired vision. They walk around in darkness. So it should not surprise us that they come to some really irrational conclusions. How many of you have heard of Dennis Prager? Quite a few of you. He's a relatively popular radio talker. I've never heard him on radio, but I happened across a couple of his speeches on YouTube, and I have a second question. How many of you have a commentary at home? I would expect most of you do. I have a related question. If you have a commentary, how many of you have read it cover to cover? He wrote a commentary in 5 volumes on the Pentateuch, first 5 books of the Bible. And I thought, I'm going to try this out. So I ordered the one on Genesis, and I've owned it for, a week and a half, and I've read 3/4 of it. It's pretty interesting perspective. He's Jewish, so not everything that he writes I would agree on. But he makes a big case for that. Let me back up. He makes a rather audacious claim. And the audacious claim is this, that he has never met a secular person who is wise. And, you know, he's, you know, if you want to be successful in radio, I suppose you have to be a bit provocative. And he justifies that by saying that the Proverbs says that the beginning of wisdom is the fear of God. And he argues that Western civilization, the Judeo-Christian ethic, based on the first five books of the Bible, has given rise to the most prosperous culture in the history of man. You know, if without that, we walk in darkness. So we come back to this scripture, "He who follows me shall not walk in darkness." We should not be confused about the gender, what do you call it now, gender fluidity, I don't know if it's the correct pronunciation. You know, we should not be confused by this, but I'm afraid we're going to be, because we should not underestimate the influence that the culture around us has. The educational system is working overtime to normalize behavior and lifestyle. They're having a gay pride parade in Columbus, Ohio. Is it tomorrow? Today. And people we know are participating. And we live in Sugar Creek. They're walking in darkness. There is no clarity. So Jesus says he is the light of the world, and then he transfers it over to us. And he said, "You are the light of the world." Jesus had an amazing capacity to inspire people to a destiny that seems improbable. While it is very probable for the Son of God to claim that he is light, for him to tell his followers that you are the light of the world is a rather audacious statement, don't you think? I mean, he had a bunch of fishermen following him, and they were to be the light of the world. A city that is set on a hill cannot be hidden. And then the second part in verse 16 is this: "Let your light shine before men." Oops, I missed a troublesome word. He said, "Let your light so shine." Let your light shine in such a manner that people will see it. I mean, this is the classic example of the sermon that is to be seen and not heard. Use words, you know, if necessary. "Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father in heaven." This is a big challenge. To exemplify the way of God in a manner that it is convincing. Now, I'll show you some graphics in a minute, but in one respect, that is becoming increasingly both more difficult and easier. Because as the world gets darker, being a light is easier. And if you're driving down the road at sunset, you know, you might have your brights on, but you know, you don't notice them that much. But as the sun sets, and as darkness becomes more and more evident, the light of your headlights become much, much more visible. Not to mention illuminating the roadway for you so that you understand and know the path to follow. I hope, I trust, you know, that God will give us the courage to speak out in a rational manner. One of the challenges is that, you know, where I come from, where you came from, and, you know, my generation, and then there's Joe, who's really the Ancient of Days. You know, correct me if I'm wrong, Joe, but I think in your generation it would be safe to say that there was still a healthy respect for the Bible. Today, arguing from the Bible is no longer an effective means for most people. So our challenge in being a light is to be able to address things that are absurd in a rational manner. Now, that's the title of the commentary is, it's called The Rational Bible, which I looked at it and I thought, the rational Bible? I mean, I've never read a Bible that's irrational, but I mean, I think it makes an important point. We have reached a point, I mean, the notion that I can choose my gender or that gender is fluid, let's call it what it is. It's scientifically absurd. It's scientifically absurd at the chromosomal level. We need to be very clear about such things. And then we get to Matthew chapter 6, verse 22. The lamp of the body is the eye. If therefore your eye is good, if your whole body will be full of light. Now think about what that's telling us. If we have the right perspective, if our eye is accurate, if we have 20/20 vision in a spiritual sense, our entire body, it says, will be full of light. How we see things, or should I say, how accurately we see things, will determine the clarity with which we are able to order our lives. And we read as much right here. But if your eye is bad, your whole body will be full of darkness. If therefore the light that is in you is darkness, and I was struck by that saying, hence the title, How Dark Is Your Light? You know, if the light that is in you is darkness. Is that a contradiction? How can light be darkness? I'll show you in a minute. You know, light's an interesting... The color of light, which we'll look into in a moment, is a fascinating thing as opposed to the color of a physical object. You know, the challenge is to get the two to be calibrated if you're a printer. But the color of light and the color of paint operates completely differently if you mix them. We'll talk more about that later. Here it's Jesus Christ said, now remember, we understand a lot of these things today in a manner that would not have been, I mean, understandable at the atomic level the way we understand it today with physics. And yet he spoke with clarity, and it's still true today. I mean, it's possible for light to be dark. We'll see that in a minute. So, the lamp of the body is the eye, and if therefore the eye, if our perspective is good, your whole body will be full of light. So we see a progression that is true at a number of levels. What we see shapes how we think. And how we think will ultimately come out in how we talk and... You know, then, of course, we end up doing stuff. But it starts like it did in the week of creation with light. Being illuminated, bringing illumination to this world was the first thing that God did. The first thing. What we see, our perspective, how clear our perspective is, determines how effective we are in our lives. Otherwise, you know, we're confused. And I find it fascinating. I mean, I had conversations with individuals this week. You know, the gay pride thing, it's, you know, I mean, 10 years ago when I was in Germany, I made the mistake. I think I've told you this story before. I stepped in it on the last day of the feast because they had a gay pride parade in Berlin. And I made the big mistake of saying, I worked this in on my last day sermon, and I said, you know, a lot of people have come up to me and apologized for what is going on in Berlin. They were embarrassed that the foreign people would have to see this on the news. And my question was, in 10 years from now, are you still going to be as embarrassed as you are today with the new cultural innovation? And everybody was with me. Oh yeah. I mean, that there's no way that we're ever going to get used to this abomination. All the heads were nodding. And I said, let me test that on you. It was only 3 decades ago or so, in which in Germany it was next to impossible for an unmarried young couple to be able to rent an apartment. Because the owner didn't want to be a participant in what at that time was known as fornication. I mean, today it's called the fiancé. 10 years ago, when I brought this up, that was the accepted practice in Germany as it is here today. I mean, who would not want to live with someone to see if it works before you make the big commitment? What I didn't know is, this is the beautiful thing about speaking to audiences you don't know. You know, it's equal opportunity offenses. What I didn't know is there was a young couple in the audience that was living together on their father's farm who was a member of the church. So my friend, who I just had opportunity to spend some time with again when I was over there, came up to me and said, John, afterwards, he said, you need to go talk to so-and-so. He's really upset at you. And I said, whatever for? I mean, he's my friend. What could he possibly be upset about? He said, well, your sermon. I said, my sermon? Yeah. And then he explained it to me. So he thought that I had gotten up in front of all 200 people to take him to task by making this an issue. And I went and talked to him, and we got things worked out. But you know what was interesting? What was interesting is the young couple wasn't offended at all. They said, he's absolutely right. We shouldn't be doing this. You see, today that is accepted by everyone. Because it is natural human nature to want to acculturate or to be like everybody else, we struggle with this whole light thing. Because guess what? Being a light is really noticeable. You ever notice that? You turn on a light in a dark room, Everybody sees it. All right, so we're back to the original graphic. How dark is your light? So let's get mathematical here. How dark is your light? It's a matter of perspective. We've got the light quotient and the darkness quotient. So that is what the light looks like. I mean, it's a little bit washed out up there on the screen, but you get the idea. That is 100% light. Light does not get lighter than white. That's what it looks like if we make it 90% and we mix in 10% of darkness. That's what it looks like if we mix in 30% darkness. That's what it looks like if you go half and half. I mean, that's a pretty, don't you think that's a pretty good mixture to have? I mean, let's not be that unreasonable, you know, let's not shine the light out that brightly. I mean, let's just darken it down. You know, you're kind of half and half, half darkness, half light. What we're doing, by doing that, is creating the absence of clarity. You're just becoming like the world around you. That's what it looks like when it's 70% darkness. You see the light up there? You can still see it. And then there's 90%. It's there. I drew a circle around it. You know, on my screen, which has a little bit higher resolution, you can still see it. How dark is your light? That's the question that Jesus Christ asked us. Those who are supposed to be the light of the world, the city set on a hill that cannot be hidden. If darkness is the absence of light, then it begs the question, what color is light? Stated another way, what is the composition of light? Now, if you're into the light thing, I mean, it's a mixture of colors, and it's interesting how it works. So, I just stated, you've heard this said probably 1,000 times, that darkness is the absence of light. That's why God had to create it. So here's black. Actually, this is black. Now, black is, in fact, the absence of light. Because when on your television, on your monitors, the way the computers are programmed is you have a mixture of red, green, and blue. If I have no red, if I have no green, and if I have no blue, if you look on there, you can see the zero. Red, green, and blue is all at zero. So darkness is, in fact, the absence of light. It is just like the Bible said. Now, it's interesting, because I said there's a difference. If you're talking about the color of light, you take away, it kind of makes sense. You take away all the different colors of light, you end up being dark. I mean, how could it be anything else? Well, I mean, if you mix red, green, and blue paint together, you keep mixing stuff, you keep putting it together and you add to it, eventually you end up with black. So it's the exact opposite. This works. Here we go. So, that's red. The screen is not doing a real good job. I'll just tell you, that's red. It's 255 units of it. And Dave could explain you why it's 255. I wonder, Dave, why it's not 256, because you need one bit to do something, I suppose. So that's red. So the question becomes, what color is your light? And you put a filter on light, and now all of a sudden it's red. So, I mean, are you the red guy, or are you the green guy, or the blue guy? Some of you are thinking, why does it matter? Well, we'll find out. So there's red, and then there's green. So if you look here, I have zero red now, 255 units of green, and a zero units of blue. The color changed to green. And then there's blue. Zero red, zero green, 255 units of blue, and I've got bright blue. So now what happens if we mix them all together? We saw if we have nothing, we end up with black. So if we mix them all together in equal parts, you end up with white. Somebody said, how's that possible? It's just the way it works. Equal parts, and again, we're talking about light, not paint. If you had equal parts of red, green, and blue paint, you'd end up with black. But if you have equal parts of red, green, and blue light, you end up with white. Jesus said, be the light of the world. In other words, white. You know, what do we read in Revelation? I mean, the bride is clothed in what? White. He made our sins that were red as what? White as snow. It's equal parts of three colors. Whatever does that mean? Let me make a proposal. That's red. Now we can see the color. It's not washed out. And then we have green. And then we have blue. And then I could ask you the question, which one is you? You're red guy, green guy, blue guy. So let's think about what we associate these colors with. And you come to a red light, what do? You stop. And if you come to a green light, what do? You go. Any kid knows that. What do if you come to a blue light? Huh?
You're at Kmart.
You're at Kmart. Their marketing has worked, right? She knows the color. Stop and go. Trust. Make sense? Justice is red. It's like fire. It's hard. Mercy, you might say, is green. Not a lot of green stuff that grows when it's hot, right? You've got fire. And then there's the faith component. And it's interesting, where do you look to when you find that you have to walk in faith? Down or up? Up. What color is the sky? Yeah, I'm sure, you know, somebody can say, you know. Really, is that true? I'm always looking and learning, and in the research that I've done over the last 6 years on organizational stuff that I'm working on, one of the things that I've found to be just absolutely remarkable is how the physical, spiritual, and scientific world just meshes together. So now what happens? When we mix equal parts of justice, mercy, and faith together, we're back to this. Because Jesus said, "Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you pay tithes of mint, anise, and cumin, and have neglected the weightier matters of the law, justice, mercy, and faith." You know, one of the problems with Christianity is that you've got the red, the green, and the blue Christians. Now, don't ask me how to categorize them, okay? What I'm simply saying is, and what Christ's criticism of the religious leaders of his day was, the fact that they tended to brand themselves and then compare themselves among themselves, forgetting that if my brand is red or my brand is green or my brand is blue, that I'm missing the point. Because the only brand that matters is a mixture of all three of those components, justice, mercy, and faith, so that I can be what Jesus Christ already is, the light of the world.